Welcome to Up Close with Australian IT Sales Leaders. I'm your host, Pri Sarkar, and today we're chatting with Michael Stein. Mike brings extensive experience in the areas of sales, strategy, transformation, consulting, technology, and organizational and financial management. He's held senior positions with management consulting, data storage, communication, software and information services, and has been a director with Avaya, KPMG, Ericsson, and was CEO for the Australian operations of Storability and Red Enterprise. Mike has also independently consulted on strategy and change management to Telstra, Reckon, UXC, and the Australian Securities and Investment Commission. And prior to this, he's had senior management positions in, you know, financial information services arena with Nitrid and Stockwatch. Mike has both breadth and depth across the IT industry and services. His career represents a solid track record of overachievement in managing business-to-business sales, business development, marketing across the IT&T market. And essentially, he's a team builder and masterful transformation executive. Mike holds a Bachelor of Business from the University of Technology, Sydney. He's also been post-educated under the prestigious Securities Institute, where he refined his skills in delivering significant shareholder value to the organizations he represents and deepening his understanding of compliance issues. So, Mike, welcome to the conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Pri, and thank you for the invitation to contribute to this valuable series.
Fantastic. So now tell me, how did you get into the sales profession?
That's a very good question. I, as you've preempted there, I did a Bachelor of Business in Marketing, and I excelled at market research as part of that, and I also did an applied psychology sub-major. Out of that, I started in the industry in marketing and in market research, and I spent an enormous amount of energy and effort in delivering reports on potential new product introductions, and I used to deliver those to a board and a marketing manager at the time, and sort of walk away and go to the next report. And I got very, very frustrated that I was saw opportunities for execution and delivering sales revenue out of these execution of the reports, but I was never actually actively involved. So from there, I decided, no, it's time to bite the bullet. I need to get into sales.
Okay, indeed. And that's interesting because from a data and research perspective, I guess, often that's one of the weaknesses that you know early salespeople face in terms of managing data and interpreting research.
Yes, I think that you know it helps to have some sort of analytical background to what you're doing. The reality is though that I think that sales is very much a social science, and so you know if you've got the scientific element or the technical in our industry abilities and understanding, that's important. But the reality is that you know it's really the social aspects that really make the difference between a mediocre salesperson or leader and one that is absolutely excelling and you know high performing.
Right. So and then, what made you choose a career in leadership?
I suppose I felt it was right when I realised that I'd repeatedly overachieved as a salesperson from quarter to quarter, from year to year. And I got to the point where, to be honest, my peers were kind of seeking my counsel and advice on, you know, major deals they were doing and opportunities and, you know, sort of bouncing ideas and concepts against me. And from my perspective, you know, a key quality of a great leader is one who has credibility and empathy with those who they lead. And you can only really do that if you've been at the coalface of business and sales, if you're going to be a sales and technology leader. And so it was a combination of all those aspects that really drove me to the leadership front. It's not something that I actively pursued. It was more, you know, sort of a soft mould from being a high-performing sales individual, an individual contributor, and moving into more of a leadership role. It's not right for everyone, and there are many, many salespeople out there who, you know, strive to be a sales director, and there's many more that, you know, again, a fraction of those that sort of have achieved it and gone, no, it's not for me. So it's not for everyone. Even, you know, an exceptionally high-performing sales individual is not necessarily best suited for leadership. So it's a decision one must take with, you know, a degree of measure.
Now, that's a great point. So often we see that, you know, if you, John Maxwell actually talks about the four levels of leadership, where he talks about self-leadership and then peer leadership and then team leadership and eventually group leadership. And, you know, it's a great guide. You just touched upon, you know, as peers started looking to you for leadership, you then decided to step that up to the next level. And so true. So often, I guess, people try to take on leadership roles, but then themselves haven't got step one, which is self-leadership, in place. And those cracks show.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's imperative to be able to have, you know, walk the walk as well as talk the talk, as they say, to use a common analogy.
Indeed. Well, what do you believe are the main challenges for technology sales leaders today?
Wow, I think there's many, Pri, and it's a very good question. I think, you know, fundamentally meeting short-term revenue expectations against a backdrop of maintaining, you know, long-term
right.
strategy is always a challenge in today's environment. So one needs to, you know, act tactically, yet, you know, maintain and think strategically. And, I mean, let's put it on the table, hitting tactical sales goals whilst...
Yeah.
creating value for a customer can be a challenge for either a salesperson or a leader. But fundamentally, I think that this is the difference between, you know, business development versus account direction. And a true leader really creates what I'd like to say is a mutually beneficial relationship between their customers
sure.
and their organisations. And this is and what success should look like. The other major challenge that I see from a technology sales leadership perspective is really achieving the right mix of talent in sales, in management, and in leadership. You know, you need teams where they are able to fundamentally innovate yet execute, and that's an absolute challenge in today's market. Matching,
sure.
you know, things like matching go-to-market models with talent is an art, let's face it.
Yeah.
The third major challenge that I really see is in selling new and, you know, the latest release technology against a backdrop of legacy technology. You know, there's an impetus in our industry to always create the latest and the greatest or to acquire a company.
Sure.
And then there is a burning imperative across the internals of any technology organisation to either push for payback on, you know, R&D or gain a return on investment against an acquisition cost of a, you know, a new business that they've just bought and created as a product or a business unit. And I think that versus selling tried and tested legacy solutions is what I'd like to say is the Mount Everest of sales leadership. You know, where do you do it? With who do you do it? How do you do it? Who are you targeting? Why are you targeting them? So, you know, you need to be very, very careful. And I think that's a real challenge in itself. You don't want to, you know, you want to have thought leadership. You want to have the latest and greatest in the innovation of technology and R&D in terms of your product sets and your solution sets and create value out of that. But you don't want to be going and burning either new or existing customers because there's a mantra in your organisation to go out there and push this new product or service or solution. So that's an absolute challenge for sales leadership. And finally, I think the one of the key challenges that I see is, you know, consumerisation of technology. I mean,
right.
we are living in an age of unprecedented consumerisation of technology that really is creating enormous challenges for technology sales leaders. We've moved basically from, you know, what was once and as, you know, it was a fundamentally a business to business, a B2B at the core of technology innovation and development to one which is really consumer-led innovation with
right.
business playing catch-up more often than not, unfortunately. So this reality has never happened before in the history of technology leadership
yes.
over the last millennium. things used to get created originally, you know, if you look back historically, you know, more in the defense realm or in, you know, later in business realm, and, you know, pushed out to businesses and to suppliers of business technology and business services. And then the last person in the supply chain, or the last group in the supply chain, was the consumer, and that's completely changed now. So this has created complex challenges for traditional sales leaders that needs to be met head on.
Wow, no, that's terrific. I mean, you're absolutely right. How, I guess, what do you recommend is the best way to overcome some of these challenges that you just pointed out?
Well, that's why I'm now looking to consult with some key organisations. But fundamentally, it's still imperative to hit short-term revenue goals. And let's face it, this is the short-term revenue is what pays for your staff salaries and keeps the lights on in your organisation. Right?
Yeah.
So, however, you cannot lose sight of maintaining course on sales and organisational strategy. So sales leaders, from my perspective, I believe need to identify where their sustainable growth will come from. And that could be new account logos or from account development or et cetera. It could be an acquisition. It could be whatever. What it's not about in terms of, you know, how you're going to overcome these challenges, it's not about running a forecast from Salesforce or your spreadsheet. I'm not saying you don't need to do it. These challenges will not be solved by your leadership doing that. Staff need to be mentored, they need to be coached, tweaked, prodded, and leaders basically need to maintain an approach to their sales organisation around people and talent, one that fosters people acquisition, people development, people encouragement, people planning, people transitioning where appropriate. So I think there's a clear and consistent messaging required for your internal organisation, and as a leader you need to set up what I would call a burning imperative and ensure that you plan and execute on it with senior executive sponsorship. And finally, in terms of sales for new technologies, because we've covered a number of challenges, and that's one of them, you know, versus your organization's tried and tested legacy solution sales, it's really imperative to strategically pick the right targets for the right reasons in the right areas and match your resourcing accordingly. And getting that down pat is the difference between success and mediocrity.
Right. Absolutely. You made a couple of comments there. I'd like to pick up specifically on, you talked about people and talent and how important that was. You mentioned a number of things there. What is your approach to building and maintaining top-performing sales team?
That's a complex question, but a very good one. You know, traditionally when I've walked into an organisation, I've used what I would classify as a transformational process that, you know, I've developed over many years that's worked for me and for, you know, large technology organisations. But fundamentally, I mean, the very first thing a leader must do is establish trust and credibility with their people. Without that, there will be no loyalty, and whatever you as a leader does or says won't be executed on. Either they'll be half executed or you won't have the loyalty and trust for your troops to actually, you know, take the command. So, you know, from this cornerstone of trust and loyalty, a leader can then start to look at the mechanics of execution to build a high-performing sales team that can meet the challenges at hand.
Right. Absolutely. Getting tactical for a moment, what have you looked for when employing team members?
I boil it down. It's quite simple. I mean, there's fundamentally, I suppose, four things that I'd look at. And, you know, top of the list is really honesty and integrity. You know, I once hired... I'm not going to mention any names because I'm sure I'll be listening, but I once hired a gentleman who told me he just lost a major deal. And those listening to this might think, are you crazy? Why would you hire someone that just lost a major deal? The reality is that I actually went through the process of the deal with the gentleman concerned. And there was a very good reason behind it that was absolutely beyond his control. But out of that, you know, some of the fundamental things that I asked that person and that individual was, you know, well, what are the lessons you learned from it? And, you know, what
sure.
did you do differently? And all of those, you know, those 101 questions. And it became blatantly obvious that as well as having honesty and integrity, this particular individual also had the second aspect that I regard as being absolutely paramount to employing
right.
team members, and that is proven skills and abilities. So
yeah.
historically, you know, you can go through track record, you know, you look at the quarterly numbers, the annualized numbers, you know, are they hitting their numbers, have they hit their numbers, to what level, and, you know, go through all that side of it. The third thing that I think is very important and quite often overlooked is cultural fit and commitment. Yeah. And when I say commitment, I'm talking about, does the individual really want to work for this organisation? So, you know, that cultural fit and the commitment, the yes, I really have a burning desire to be a part of this team, is absolutely paramount. And the final thing, which is an interesting one and a quite a hard one to sort of put metrics around, is simply put, gravitas. So, and that's a weight in what the individual is saying, where they sit in the industry, and it encapsulates all of those, you know, those prior things that I've mentioned. But
sure.
most importantly, what I regard as gravitas is not just the weight in what you say, it's how you listen. So in other words, when I ask the individual a question during, for instance, an interview, it's imperative that they're listening to what I'm asking. So many times we've gone through interviews, and I'm sure you've done the same pre in your time, you'll ask a candidate for an opinion or a question, and they've answered it, but they've not actually met the answer, which tells me they're not listening. So, you know,
absolutely.
All of that, all of those aspects, if you like, are what I look for when I'm employing team members.
Absolutely. And that doesn't change. You know, I was recently working on an assignment for a senior general manager, you know, within the industry, and again, not mentioning any names, but one of the most common feedback which came back from the executive team at the interview debrief was that when they pressed people for specific answers to questions, they either did not demonstrate the ability to understand what the question was or the extent to which the information that was sought in the answer. And absolutely, you know, when you talk about gravitas, that's a great point. Thank you. I mean, you know, in addition to others, but that really hits that nail on the head, because I think in and of itself, that's really your opportunity to demonstrate and overexceed what's being asked of you in that moment.
Absolutely. And I mean, from a sales perspective, one, you know, a cornerstone of successful salespeople now is, you know, the ability to ask insightful questions rather than being, you know, what we call the talking brochure. And I think that insightful questions can only be answered or only actually be queried if that individual is actually, you know, hearing what the customer is saying. In order that they ask a corresponding insightful question that will, you know, perpetuate and lead to the generation of value creation between the customer and your organisation. So it's absolutely core to the skill.
Sure, sure. Now, how do you deal with average and underperformers?
I think, you know, confrontation up front, be honest. You know, lay down the issue at hand. Whenever I've done that, I've never ever had a single sales member disagree. They're usually very
right.
aware if they're underperforming, and in fact, you know, quite often there's a burst of some sort of emotion when you've done that. And from there, it's really a matter of, you know, setting realistic goals for improvement and managing that very tightly from a performance perspective. You know, some individuals I regard it as, you know, from a leadership perspective, you know, it doesn't reflect well on the leader, as you are a leader, to have an underperforming team member. And so the quickest way of getting rid of the problem is to, you know, basically devolve the relationship between the individual and the organisation and move them out of that organisation or your organisation. But that's, you know, I don't think that's the right path. And it may be at some point in time, but it's certainly not the initial right path. So I think that, you know, mentoring, coaching, setting corrective goals that are realistic for improvement and managing those tightly gives all, you know, the opportunity to improve. And failing that, then, you know, quite often it is beneficial for an organisation and for the individual, more importantly, quite often to leave. And you know, they may be the best salesperson in the world. Maybe there's not the right, you know, some of those things we spoke about earlier, the right cultural fit. You know, they may not trust or be aligned with their leadership. So there's a number of issues that can bubble up in the process that's hampering that individual from achieving, and it's not necessarily the core reason why the individual, you know, is not achieving, is that they're underperforming because they're, you know, don't have the skills. They may still have skills, but they're not aligned correctly into that organisation. There's a number of aspects, so I regard all of those elements.
Sure. You made a really good point there, again, in terms of, you know, the consultation piece. So often, and I think over the last 10 to 15 years, we've, you know, consultative selling has been talked about over and over again, and you referred to the talking brochure earlier on. And one of the key complaints that salespeople have of leaders is that as much as sales leaders want people to be consultative salespeople, they're not really consultative leaders, you know?
And
you know, in the same way that you want the salesperson to be asking the question what's happening with clients and solving those problems, I guess the onus, again, needs to remain with the leader to be actually asking the questions of their own team members and identifying what the problems are, providing a solution or making a decision about whether they need to move on. But so often it's the decisions are actually handed down without any prior consultation. That's really when things get difficult.
Look, you know, consultative internal processes is absolutely imperative. I've seen it go the other way, where it's goes into the sublime and the ridiculous in terms of, you know, everyone must agree, but which is an extreme example. The reality is that, you know, salespeople get off on you know, rewards and recognition and respect. And, you know, if you're consulting with your team in parallel with your own thought processes in an open, mindful, insightful and thoughtful way, then you will quickly gain the respect of those individuals. You will then, you know, be able to basically, you know, they will accept your mentoring, your coaching, your ideas, you know, and all of that is very, very important. And the consultative approach, in fact, is imperative to the success of know, closing deals and running through sales cycles and meeting KPIs and doing all the things that we have to do as business people. So I think that, you know, without that consultative approach, you know, you're destined for failure, either as a leader or as a salesperson.
Absolutely. Two things before we wrap up today. What do you think gives sales organizations the greatest competitive advantage today?
I think the answer is very, very simple. People.
Well,
I think that, you know, if I go back and hark back into my memory banks of technology, you know, I've seen some organisations that have had the best technology solutions that I've ever seen in the marketplace. But it comes down to people. You know, they, for one reason or another, they haven't got traction in the market, they haven't penetrated it, they haven't got their market share, they didn't get sales the way they thought they'd get it, et cetera, et cetera. And
right.
The reality is that comes down to the leadership and the people that you know, are around the leadership driving and executing on the, you know, to get the result. So I think that really the reality is that people are are number one. People are complex beasts. So, you know, to have an advantage with your people, then they need to be nurtured, they need to be protected, and all those good things. But the reality is it's people, people, and people is the number one greatest competitive advantage that you have as an organisation, and particularly in the technology space.
Right. No, that's terrific. I was just thinking, just to paraphrase Henry Ford around, you know, you can take everything that I have, my machines, my factories, my land, but give me my people. And everything else has evolved, that remains the same.
Yes, yes, exactly, exactly. It's a good point.
Last question. How do you keep developing yourself as a leader?
It's hard to find time for it, but I think, you know, if you're really immersed in what you're doing, you are developing yourself by definition. Having said that, look, from my perspective, beyond, you know, the usual reading of business literature and publications and, you know, connecting in groups via, you know, social media and LinkedIn, et cetera, you know, standard training and development courses. I mean, there's one thing that I do like to do, which is a little bit outside the box, and that is, you know, really just going outside my usual network of contacts. And I find that that can develop yourself as a professional and broaden the way in the way in which you think and the horizons in which you can operate in. And I think, you know, when you do that, you need to ask, you know, which I do. I ask lots of insightful, in brackets, one might say silly questions that you can learn from. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, asking all those questions. So I think that's, you know, for me, that's probably a cornerstone of the development of myself as a professional.
Right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been very informative. It addresses so many issues that is on the minds of sales leaders and is very, very relevant to what's happening in the industry today. So I'm sure our listeners are going to get a lot out of it. Thanks so much again for spending time with us today.
Pleasure. Thank you, Brett.
Bye-bye.